Discussions with Ajahn Suchin at the Foundation in Bangkok, January 2020. Recorded by the Foundation, edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Sun Mai, John, Sarah, Anne, Tam, Gung, Tai, Little Hang, Eve, Nina, Alberto, Long, Sundra, Pong, Roti, Sukin, Ha, Gabby, Lee, Hang, Zhao, Paina, Lob, and Chong.
Yesterday evening, when we come back to the hotel, our team have a review and some questions we already discussed in the afternoon. And today morning, we discussed about the point about the anatta. The general approaching is because every dhamma arises by their condition, and the dependent on or then by condition, that means so we can understand the anatta here. With my add-on, I want to share my idea is when the dhamma appear, it appear by their characteristics and their function and their manifestation. And so on this point, characteristic, function, and other one, it's so not a thing in the conventional. And so that means the way to approaching is dependent on each other dhamma is one way to understand anatta. And with my point is understand the characteristic of this dhamma when this appear is so anatta also. And I want to raise this point and someone talk only way is dependent. Knowing, understand the dependent or condition is the way to the knowing anatta. But with my point, I have another way to understanding what the true meaning of anatta. And I want to raise this point to hear more elaboration from you.
So for example, yesterday in one of the discussions, we were talking about hardness, touching hardness. So at the moment of touching, there is a characteristic. The nature of hardness appears. Actually, it doesn't matter what it's called, because when there is understanding, when there is awareness, it's just that dhamma, that characteristic that appears, that can be known at that moment, no matter what it's called. Sometimes we look at so many different terms and words, like when we're talking about virya the other day, and we can talk about the characteristic as driving or energizing, and the function of forbearing, like the aspect of patience, for example. But then in the end, nothing is known about the reality that appears at this moment. So I think it's better just understand what appears right now, and that is the only way to understand what is meant as anatta. Because when it's just that dhamma, there's no thing in it, no self in it, and that is the meaning of anatta. No one there, nothing there at all, just that hardness. But we don't even have to call it hardness, just that which is touched at that moment.
So that means, with my understanding, the function of seeing the hardness we're touching is anatta. If we understand it, not really to thinking it's conditioned by weak, it's conditioned by weak.
It's just that dhamma that arises and falls away instantly. Nothing there, nothing in the hardness. As soon as it's gone, it's nothing at all. So it just arises for an instant, gone instantly. No one can control it. No one can make it arise. No one can stop it from falling away. It's just that dhamma which arises for an instant and has that nature of hardness that can be directly known even now. And that is what is meant by anatta.
Is your question about the meaning of anatta, or is your question about how anatta can be known?
How anatta can be known? Because one person thing is thinking about the condition is a way to understand anatta. With my understand, the characteristic of the dhamma is anatta.
There is no point in talking about how it is to be known, because the panya that knows it is anatta itself. So we cannot talk about how this characteristic is to be known, how that characteristic is to be known.
But at the level of intellectual understanding, we must to thinking about, so now it's thinking about the anatta.
And we just understand the meaning of anatta, as Sarah has just been explaining. Apart from that, it's down to conditions, because the conditions for the panya, which sees the anatta characteristic, do not include some way of experiencing anatta. That is not how it happens. Just like the characteristic of impermanence or the characteristic of dukkha, there's no way to experience those characteristics. Panya is developed by conditions, and panya will see whatever characteristic by conditions, only one at a time. It's not useful to think in terms of how one particular characteristic can be known in preference to others. What is useful is to hear the explanation of the meaning and just to consider that, but not for the purpose of experiencing the characteristic, but just because we are considering all aspects of the Dhamma, so this has to come up, so naturally we're interested to know what anatta means. The term not self is not a term that is meaningful to anyone who has not heard the Dhamma, but it's explained in the commentaries as meaning not subject to mastery, to complete control, cannot be controlled. That's the essential meaning. But as we know, there is no way of knowing when panya will arise, what object it will take, or what aspect of the object it will experience. It's all by conditions.
So after this question, we can think that only knowing about the meaning of anatta and also the nature of Dhamma is anatta.
Like at this moment of touching here, is there a table, is there a thing here, or is just hardness at this moment?
It's a hard.
Just hardness. No thing in it.
Yes.
That is anatta.
Yes.
Just
that's a point.
Just Dhamma.
Yes, just a point. That means understand what's up here,
so
the nature.
So the way to understand anatta is to understand Dhamma. When there's understanding Dhamma as Dhamma, there is understanding, the gradual understanding of what is meant by anatta. No thing, no person there.
Yes.
And that's why Ajahn always talks about at the beginning, like, what is Dhamma? Because if there's no understanding of what is Dhamma, there is no way to understand what is meant by anatta.
I think it's clear from the text that the understanding of the different characteristics develop separately and not uniformly. And of course, we know what the conditions for the arising of panya are. They are hearing the Dhamma and reflecting on it and so forth. But another condition that is assumed but not always mentioned is previous accumulations. And we have no idea what particular aspects of what particular Dhammas understanding has taken in the past, in previous lifetimes. So that's another factor that comes into the picture. All of which means that we shouldn't think in terms of giving preference or priority to any particular Dhamma or any aspect of any Dhamma. It all happens by conditions.
I know there was discussion on Saturday about Wirya and various aspects of Wirya, and Sarah, you just mentioned it again. It can be the, you know, energizing, driving, also forbearing.
Enduring, the function of Wirya is to endure. So when consider the function as, well, endure or forbear, but enduring it, then it indicates that aspect of patience.
Yes.
Like, even whether it's kusala or akusala virya, it endures.
Endures. I still...
It's patient.
Yes, yes, I know. I guess, yeah. I guess in my own mind, I'm trying to link the driving and energizing with the enduring.
Right.
And that may be a wrong approach to
right.
it.
And when we read about, for example, the four right efforts, the four padanas, well, one of them is the forbearing from akusala not arisen, and one is non-persisting of akusala that's already arisen.
So
non-persisting. So if akusala has arisen, the non-persisting. So I'm just mentioning that these point to the aspect of patience, the enduring and the forbearance. And I think you were just asking about if we say the characteristic is like the driving or the energizing of associated states, then it seems different from the function of forbearing. I think it's because we're so used to thinking in terms of the translations like effort and patience. So that's why, as Ajahn said, one has to understand what virya is and consider carefully what the aspect is, which is different, like the characteristic of marshalling or driving the other states is different from our usual thought about effort or energy.
Just on that point, if I could interpose, we think of effort in terms of doing something, right. conventionally, I mean, but also effort is needed to withstand heat and cold and that sort of thing, or an opposing force. Sometimes that requires effort too, of the enduring or persisting kind.
That's very helpful. Active.
Thank you.
I sometimes think of it rather than, what did you just say? Resisting.
Yes.
And what was the word you used? Better, whatever it was.
I said the active form, doing
yes.
things, and
yes.
then I said also withstanding or resisting.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Resisting an opposing force.
Right.
And on the question that someone had asked about why it's the greatest treasure, I also remembered afterwards that, well, virya, it is an indriya, it is a bala, and it's also said when it's wholesome virya of the path, it's the, or wholesome virya, it is the root of all kusala. So in this way, it is such a great treasure. Without virya, the other path factors couldn't arise. They need virya to marshal them and to be the root of all kusala in this way.
Yes, driving energy behind the associated
states.
Should be
And forbearing.
I should be able to remember that, marshalling them.
Yes.
Thank you both.
But when we talk on Dhamma, we should think about the virya to listen, to understand the reality right now. Otherwise, we think about other things like virya when there is hardness, something like that, hardship. But I think that even right now, we are talking about virya, but virya does not appear. So is there any understanding of that which is now appearing? See? So it takes one away from understanding virya right now, that when there is seeing, there is no virya. But who can know that? Impossible, because it's only the teachings of Buddha in details about each reality as it is. So when we think in terms of parami, or how very difficult to really understand what appears as we're talking about, then we begin to understand that is virya. Even we cannot experience virya right now, but it begins to develop the no one, no self. And this is the point, because all of the teachings of Buddha will bring about understanding right now. That is the goal. and the aim and the point of listening. Otherwise, from life to life, it will take us away from what is there now, according to the teachings of the Buddha. We learn a lot in English now, but next life, who knows, in what language, and what we have learned by words only, lost. Because right now, who can speak Makati or Pali word? While many, many lives ago, we don't know whether we had talked and spoken in Pali. So the point is, from hearing about realities right now, so when there's such understanding, what for when we listen to the teachings? Just to have more and more understanding, because only understanding can eliminate the clinging to the self, because it clings to five khandhas, which means everything appears, and that which does not appear, it's not that moment for clinging to arise, but it's there to be known as no one, no self at all. For example, right now, there is sanya, but does it appear? And when will it appear? Because there's clinging to everything. Because now, as soon as one looks or see anything, something there, or it's something, but actually it's nothing. That's why when we use the word appear well, just one word, well, how great difference between from the moment of hearing until it develops on to begin. But, and is this now better than yesterday? Is it not like yesterday? Better than seeing right now. See, it takes quite a long, long time, or eons and eons, with no one. Otherwise, the self is trying to do something. And when it is the self who is trying, that is another viriya, akusala, see. So it's like the war between ignorance and understanding. And before anyone can be the very great warrior, see, to understand that which is covered up and that which lopa and wrong understanding cling. So it just listen and panya develops itself. But the point is to know from the word that we begin to listen, Dhamma, it's now. So it, when we think in terms of Dhamma, we might think that it's something Dhamma, see? Like seeing it's Dhamma, that is Dhamma, this is Dhamma. But even the word Dhamma can cover up the truth of it. Because lopa is there and ignorance is there, long, 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 long time ago, eons and eons. So that's why this life is the life of the development of understanding, to have less clinging, because of there is less ignorance. So we can learn viriya even right now. What kind of viriya? See, the wrong viriya or the right viriya? What degree from each word of the teachings? Even one word covers everything which is not directly experienced right now. So just be happy to understand that which is covered up. But if one is not like one thing that it can be understood easily, it's wrong. Because it has to be now, anything, any moment.
John, did you just say be happy to understand what is covered up?
Seeing now, it's covered up by the idea of self,
yes.
People and things.
And be happy to understand not just intellectual understanding, but knowing it's now, but it doesn't appear, Because insufficient, not enough panya.
No panya.
No panya.
Different panya. Because if you just say, seeing is real, what panya? It depends on how much understanding is there. What do you mean by real?
Right.
Not self. It's real. So each word can condition more and more understanding, little by little, very gradually. No one can do anything, and no one is doing anything at all. All adamas. By conditions.
Usually seeing is covered up, so be happy when there is understanding of seeing just a little bit at this moment when it appears, and then it's covered up again. So that which is usually covered up can be understood now, briefly.
And if it's not piti, what is it?
Piti.
If it's not
piti,
see?
Piti can arise with either lobha or with kusala cittas, with understanding. Right. So at that moment of understanding what is usually covered up, even if just a little, even if just it's intellectual right understanding for a moment, there is piti, wholesome joy at that moment, different from the piti with lobha.
And it does mean that you have to smile. It's just there. Okay. The appreciation is there already, so fast, so very rapidly, arising and falling away. I know many realities, or jetasikas and citta right now.
And the, I can't remember the word you used, but it's because it's panya, the piti would be there. It would at a small level.
Usually when panya arises, almost always, it's with happy feeling, and piti is there with that understanding.
But it's not a rule. It depends whether it is not a pleasant feeling. It can be indifferent feeling, but not dominasa.
Yes.
They're all gone. See? Don't worry about the past and the future, which hasn't come yet. But now, when it's panya, it can understand. From hearing, considering, until directly. What feeling is now? See, we talk about several, many, but what is now? See, when it's not object of right understanding, it's gone completely. But what about next? Not known again. The whole day, the whole night, the whole life, for those who haven't listen to the teachings at all.
Feeling, we think we know how we feel.
Not all.
With feeling, we think we know how we feel. But it's definitely not a deep understanding of it, but it seems to appear is probably the wrong word, but we seem to know feeling, as in how do I feel, which is very different from the dhammas, the passing dhammas that arise and fall away. So
that is thinking.
Yes, it's thinking.
Who thinks?
Oh, me.
Yeah.
But it's not. But that's not true. The truth of it is covered up. But even thinking correctly about it, in that it is a dhamma that's gone before, rises and falls away so very, very quickly. I guess that's what we can know now until understanding develops.
Little by little.
Now, there may be thinking, oh, this pleasant feeling, and I've been feeling pleasant while Ajahn's been speaking, but no understanding of Dharma that just arises for an instant, gone immediately. it's just speculation and guesswork that it was pleasant feeling for 5 minutes, but pleasant feeling is just a dharma that passes instantly. Moments of seeing or hearing, no pleasant feeling. At moments of feeling a bit warm or a bit cold, no pleasant feeling. So it's just for a moment.
And that's not known. Not known at all.
Just at moments with lobha or moments of understanding, but just occasional moments.
And even though we may know what our feeling is at the moment, apart from it being me who knows, of course, that is actually, as I think you said, a kind of thinking about feeling that's already passed. That is not the knowing of the Dhamma that is feeling. That was the point you were making, I think.
Yes.
So that kind of knowing is available to anyone, whether they've heard the Dhamma or not, of course. And the same with some other emotions, happiness and anger and so forth. These things anyone can know when they have strong anger, for example. But it doesn't really mean that that Dhamma can be more easily known than any other Dhamma. So that kind of knowing isn't really a head start to having awareness of the actual reality.
Occasionally you hear that that is the case, but it's not.
Right.
And if you'd like to understand viriya, it's known. See, you don't have to choose the place, the subject, or anything, but from any word you listened, with understanding, developing, little by little. But it's not the actual one, the real one yet, but it can bring about thinking about it, having more, less attachment and clinging to the idea of self, unknowingly, by conditions, sankhara khanda, cetasika 50.
I just had a little question about something you just said. You said that at moments of feeling cold or warm, there was no pleasant feeling.
Moments of touching, there's pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling. So if it's too cold or too warm, then usually it's unpleasant feeling at that moment. Or moments of having aversion towards what is too cold or too warm. Unpleasant feeling, not pleasant feeling.
Again, sorry.
So moments of touching,
touching,
there's always feeling arising with the touching, and right. At those moments of touching, it must be pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling.
Right.
If it's kusala vipaka,
then
there is the experience of a pleasant object, pleasant feeling. If it's a moment of akusala vipaka, there is the experience of the unpleasant object with unpleasant feeling, usually completely unknown. And afterwards, there's thinking about feeling. So if there is thinking about how it was too warm or too cold, then usually that is with dosa, which arises with unpleasant feeling.
Right.
So lobha arises with pleasant feeling or neutral feeling. Dosa arises with unpleasant feeling. The point was that we might think for the last 5 minutes we were listening to a jhana and there was lots of pleasant feeling. But actually there are different moments in between, moments of seeing and hearing, when there is
moments of touching,
indifferent
warm
feeling,
or cold.
Moments of touching,
right.
Feeling a bit too warm or a bit too cold, no pleasant feeling. So no feeling lasts for more than an instant. So they were just examples to show there cannot be pleasant feeling all the time.
Just to continue on the point of patience. So let's say if a mother has a child who is very naughty and, you know, like moving on the time, etc. And from the point of view of someone outside, the mother seems to be still very loving, and so that person might say, oh, she's very patient. But from the point of view of the mother, for her, there's nothing unpleasant about the child. So in this case, it seems like patience seems to be like not an absolute. In both cases, there must be virya in there.
So I think it's like we said the other day, we think of patience in terms of conventional ideas and situations, and we say, oh, the mother is so patient with the child, but actually it has nothing to do with the characteristic of virya, which arises now at, as we discuss, almost every moment, except for when seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and other ahetuka cittas arise. So, like now, is it kusala virya or akusala virya? Who knows at this moment? And so we can judge, like I can look at Hung and say, oh, she's listening so patiently and quietly, but impossible to know the cittas. She may be dreaming about her breakfast or anything, we have no idea. So impossible to tell another's citta, impossible to even understand the virya that is arising now for us.
And patience to noise, a noisy child, for example, is one thing. If it's kusala, then one would be equally patient to all noisy children. But when it's one's own child, of course, it's because of attachment to the child that one has patience. So it's not a wholesome quality in that case, just based on attachment.
Another topic we discussed today morning is about the tam. In conventional term, I think tams based on a things chain and of movement. We thinking about the tam, but when we learning about Abhidhamma, and also we talking about the kana. I have a question. Kana, when in the teaching, with my understanding, it refer to the arising and falling away of the absolute Dhamma. It not refer to the time, but someone asked that it's some when we talking about it, it must be referred to the time, and I want to clear what the point the term times. The meaning in the teaching, and also especially in the moment of the Dhamma. What really is kana? What really kana?
I think kana refers to momentary, like the momentary nature of seeing. So it's kanika Dhamma, because it arises and falls away instantly. So whatever arises and falls away is kanika Dhamma. If we think about this kind of time, it's just concept, idea, nothing to do with reality, nothing to do with paramatta, Dhamma. But if we're talking about that which is momentary, that is the aspect of Dhamma, like seeing now, it has an arising and a middle and a falling away. And this is what is meant by kanika. So it's the nature of reality, that it is momentary, especially citta and cetasika.
And also we can think about it as the interval or distance between the arising of one moment of consciousness and the next. So it represents a cycle, because the consciousness arises and then persists and falls away, as we are told. So referring to that cycle from the beginning of one to the beginning of next is a kana, but it's just that cycle.
Not a cycle.
Cycle.
It's just a cycle, yeah.
Just a cycle.
It's not referred to time. Yeah.
Well, you can think of it as time if you want to, but another way of thinking of it is a cycle.
Yeah. And one point I want to elaborate more, because in the knowing about the Dhamma, Buddha teaching, the knowing the Dhamma of the past Dhamma, current Dhamma, and the future Dhamma. And can you elaborate about what mean the past, what mean the current, what mean the future of the Dhamma here? Because if we don't understand it, we easily to thinking about the time in conventional. And can you elaborate more about the past Dhamma, the current Dhamma, and also the future Dhamma? in the 11th thing to know about the Dhamma.
What time is it now?
Quarter to 11.
Quarter to 11. Okay. And what about moments ago? What time was it?
It depends, 5 minutes to 10 minutes, I don't know.
I see. Yeah. Or 10 or 12. But if there is no reality arising at all, can you tell? Nothing arises. Can you tell what time is it?
No, cannot.
See. So I think that the conventional word represents the realities, that it cannot be just one moment. This is seeing, and the other moment was not seeing, it could be hearing. And what about the future? When there are realities arising and falling away, and we think about the less of the past or many moments ago, we can think about how many in terms of as much as we can think about. But actually, it's much more rapid than this. See? The moment of seeing has fallen away, and the next moment, can you say what time is it? But there are so many different realities rising and falling away, so we don't know about the truth of what is there at all. So the point is that would anyone like to be the judge of whether this is this, or mother and parents and daughter and children and so on, the judge and the victims and so on, or just understand that actually there's nothing, if nothing arises at all.
Is nothing or nothing rest?
Pardon?
Is nothing or nothing last?
From nothing, from not seeing at all, not hearing at all. And then there is seeing and hearing and thinking. If they do not arise, can there be seeing, hearing, or thinking? So we live in the world of concept and dream about that which appears as permanent thing, like now. But the truth is that nothing is permanent.
Is your question about the description of the Rupa Khanda as including past, present and future?
Yes.
There, also in addition to what Ajahn has just been explaining, I think it's a reference to the fact that when understanding of Rupa is developed, that understanding comes to know that not only this moment Rupa is like this, but all the past Rupas and future Rupas. Because when understanding reaches a certain highly developed stage, it is able to know that in the future things will be no different from what they are now, too.
Like now, the tangible object that's experienced, hardness, is exactly the same as tangible object that was experienced a moment ago, still hardness, and last life, still hardness. In the Buddha's time, it's still hardness that is touched. Tomorrow it will be hardness, in the future hardness that's touched, because it is the characteristic of that reality that is experience, no matter past, future or present, no matter for the Buddha or anyone, it's that rupa, that reality. So this is what is meant.
Yeah.
It is the nature of reality.
It's the same nature of Dhamma.
Same nature of Dhamma.
Yeah.
Before or later, or what is seen is always visible object, no matter in the past or in the future. For the Buddha, for the mouse, it's just what is seen is just that which is visible.
It's time Nama. It's time Rupa.
Sorry, Ajahn just mentioned about from nothing, then something. And if nothing arises at any time or any experience, can you elaborate a little bit more about that? From nothing and then...
So the question is whether time is Rupa or time is Nama.
Ajahn just mentioned a few moments ago about nothing from nothing. And
like the hardness that's touched, before that hardness arose, where was that hardness?
Nothing.
Nothing at all. So before that hardness arose and was experienced, was nothing. And after it's fallen away, it's nothing again. So it's nothing and then hardness and then nothing, never to be experienced before. The hardness that was experienced a moment ago when looking at the clock, or the hardness that was experienced yesterday, nothing at all. And the hardness that hasn't come is nothing. So it's only the hardness right now that appears that is hardness. Before and after that, it's nothing. So nothing, something, nothing.
It means that is that the understanding of what is said, arising and falling away. We say arising and falling away all the time, but when we change from arising and falling, we use the term from nothing and then something and then nothing, exactly the same. So it depends on understanding, not just the word.
So the reality that from nothing and then something, it happened for all the reality, right?
Conditioned realities.
Okay.
Which arises.
Including at that rupa, chittasika, any reality.
And this is directly from the suttas. Yeah, this expression of coming from nothing, out of nothing, something coming.
So that also includes bhavanga, right? When bhavanga arises, there is something, and then it falls away, and there is nothing.
All conditioned realities.
Right.
And when we use the word conditioned realities, it's only what we say, but the truth is known until there is more and more understanding. Can eliminate the idea of self by understanding only. And the point is to understand the truth that it's nothing, there's nothing at the end of each moment.
So, for example, pillow, and my friend touches the pillow, and prior to touching it, hardness or softness, what have you, doesn't exist. But when my friend touches it and says, oh, look at this pillow, we're browsing pillows, and then I touch it. So there is the idea of self in there anyhow. It doesn't exist until this package called Eve touches it. So, the attachment and the idea of self is just in everything. It's so all-pervasive.
Are you referring to the idea of me or the idea of an underlying self?
Mm.
Because me versus you does not necessarily imply an idea of self.
The idea of self, because in that the hardness doesn't exist until I experience it, sort of a thing, kind of a thing. But it's independent of the, well, it's independent. My friend touches the pillow and then there's hardness. But as far as the self is, I don't experience it until I touch it. I don't eye-base until it's seen, kind of a thing.
So this bottle of drink is mine, not yours, right?
No.
Because I've drunk out of it. Does that mean an idea of self, necessarily?
No, that's not quite what I'm getting at. Sarah, do you understand what I'm...
So even at the moment of touching the notebook or the cushion, if there's a cushion here, if it's the, when, as soon as there's an idea of something there, then there is the idea of atta. So it doesn't atta, or the doesn't need to be anything to do with I or someone, but the idea of something there is the idea of atta, or the idea of I am touching, that in reality, not just conventionally speaking, when there's the idea there is someone here, yes. that is touching. That's the idea of utter at that moment. And even if there's no touching of the notebook, but there's just the idea of something, then it's the idea of utter, even though there's no touching or seeing of it.
Yes, yes. This underlying self.
So very common. Yes. As soon as it's something or someone, even just an idea about it, not just using the words, like we all know this is Ajahn and this is Nina, so this is not what I mean, but when that's the idea that really it is someone there or something here, then there is the idea of utter.
And
not understanding that it's just visible object or tangible object that's experienced.
Yes, and time, past, present, future, it's just now, it's just Dhammas now, time is concept.
It's only ever what appears right now, at this moment, one doorway at a time, one world at a time. But the reason, like when talking about the khandhas, they talk about past, future, present, is to indicate that the nature of any khanda, like seeing now, is exactly the same as the nature of seeing before, or the nature of seeing that hasn't come yet.
The characteristic
is always the same.
Unchanged.
Yes.
Thank you.
Back to the word appearing and arising that you mentioned yesterday. So when we think that something appears, it doesn't mean that necessarily there's panya at that moment, right? It means that it's known, right?
It's the object, but it may not be known, yes. So, and sometimes it's used in other contexts, but usually we would say, like, sanya arises now, but it doesn't appear. It means it's not the object of experience, and suddenly there's no understanding of it. So sometimes it's used just to indicate when there's any understanding, like visible object. It's seen, so in this sense, it appears, even though it's not known.
Sarah, you said about when there's idea of something, then there's idea of self. But to what I remember about the wrong view about self, like this body is me, and this is mine, something belongs to me, but it's like the wrong view about in the self, not something self outside.
Let's talk about two terms. One is Sakaya Ditti. So this is wrong view of self, just like you mentioned. So when this hardness is taken for my arm, or this seeing is taken for my seeing, concerned with oneself, this is Sakaya Ditti. This hardness is never taken for, it's not taken for yes. my arm, or not taken for my body. So this is not Sakaya Ditti. However, any Dharma that is taken for something or someone is utter ditti. So utter ditti is wider, and it includes, for example, this hardness here is not taken for my body, but it's taken for Sun's body. It's utter ditti. Or this is taken for being a table, so it's utter ditti. So it's still self-view, even though it's utter ditti, not Sakaya ditti in that case.
Thank you.
I think it's a good point to clarify, because often people think of self-view as just concerning oneself. They don't realize that when this is taken for being a table in reality, that this is also utter ditti, the opposite of understanding Dharma as anatta.
I think it depends on what we mean when we say taking to be a table in reality. Just identifying that as a table rather than a chair, for example, that's a table, not a chair, cannot necessarily involve a wrong idea of self, because that would mean there was wrong view of self all day. Because we are making concepts, we see the world in terms of concepts of people and things. I think it would be good if we could elaborate more on the words being a table in reality, different from the conventional concept.
So this is what we talked about the first day, distinguishing between Samuti Satya, conventional truth, and Paramata Satya. So conventionally is correct, this is a table, and this is a notebook, this is a jhana, and this is Nina. No one needs to hear the Buddha's teachings to learn about these things. We're all experts in Samuti Satya. But by understanding what are Paramata Satya, the truth of absolute realities, then there will be the understanding of what is absolutely real. What is touched is hardness, not a table. And then it's clear what is conventional truth and what is absolute truth. But without understanding what are dharmas, what is real, what appears now, it's impossible to understand that conventional truths like table and a jhan are just conventional ideas, not absolute realities.
Once we've heard the Dhamma and we appreciate the significance of what can be directly experienced at the present moment and what is just being thought about, we can understand the significance of that. But that doesn't alter the accumulated tendency of wrong view that was there before we heard the Dhamma in this lifetime and is there after we've heard the Dhamma in this lifetime too. So I think actually whether one has heard the Dhamma or not, the question of whether there's wrong view when thinking that's a table is still a question to be asked, because not every concept of table necessarily involves wrong view. Likewise, me or mine or I am touching a pillow or whatever, we can't assume, like with any gusala or agusala, we can't tell from the outside act or the description whether it's gusala or agusala or what kind of gusala or agusala. Wrong view of self, whether it's sakkaya ditti or atta ditti, has a particular characteristic which can be known.
I read in a book written by a quite famous Abhidhamma scholar in Vietnam, and he said that Attanuditti and Sakkayaditti are actually the same. I don't remember all his argumentations, but would you recommend more about this?
And we also read in the text that that is correct, that Sakkayaditti is Attanuditti. But we cannot say that all Attanuditti is Sakkayaditti because it's broader. So we can also read about this in the Abhidhamma text. It says Sakkayaditti is Attanuditti. So this is correct. So this is the subtlety of Dhamma. So when there is the idea that this hardness is an arm, it's Sakkayaditti and it is also Attanuditti. But when there is the wrong idea that the hardness is a table, it's Attanuditti but not Sakkayaditti. So it's a subtle point.
When we think about the concept, the table, but we know it's a concept, it's another way, but if we think it's a real table, it's still there, it's wrong, it's about wrong view, right? At the moment we think it's a real table and stay here, it's a wrong
real
view.
Real table and something lasting.
What do you mean by a real table? Do you mean real as opposed to imitation? Do you mean in reality it's a table? It has an abiding essence of tableness to
no,
it?
No, I want to clear, because you said that maybe we can still have a concept of table, but it's not wrong view. It's not necessary, it's wrong view. And I want to add more, it become wrong view when we think the table, the chair is the ring and still is there, right?
Is there anyone thinking that I see now?
Yes.
Really? I see?
I see.
If I don't ask, does anyone think about I see now? While they see.
While they see. Yes. No, we don't think really.
Because we have to understand the text about after seeing has fallen away, it's followed by sampatichana. And when that has fallen away, it's succeeded by santirana. And after that, it is votapana. And then lopa, clinging to what? The sensuous object or the self, I, unknown. See, so it's so fast until it comes the idea of something that we think about it. As I see now when someone asks whether they're seeing now and who sees, and we say, I see. But actually, even before that, thinking of that which followed three moments of vipaka citta and kriya citta, and then it's there. But no one knows. That's why there are so many degrees of akusala or attachment. So, okay, after that, we look at the mirror. We don't have to say, I am there, or something like that. But it's me. See, even you don't say anything, the asava, that which clings to the self, titti, tittasava, is there already. So it's so very, very subtle that one has to understand before there can be the understanding more and more and more about the words of the Buddha, which will lead to the understanding this moment as it is. But when we say this moment or this minute, so many, many moments of realities are there. So that's why we have to understand that to understand the word of Buddha, we better or should study carefully, respectfully, that one has to be truthful to each word, even arising and falling away, or the asava, see. So it begins from understanding what we can understand, little by little, until panya develops more, and we know more, understand more. Because this is how everyone knows before hearing the teachings, or even after hearing the teachings, it's hard. But what about something there in mind which doesn't show up yet that it's there? Or if it's not there, whatever appears, what's that if you don't know yet? But if you know, you cling with the idea. But before that, when it's not right understanding of just that, no one, nothing there, then you can understand what is meant by Dhamma.
Ajahn, I have a recollection of you explaining to me one time, many years ago perhaps, that we think that's a table, we think it's solid, substantial, but if we were asked the question, does that table have its own essence, is it permanent, we would not agree with that proposition.
But listen carefully, you agree. Because before, it's there.
Yeah.
Not there yet.
Right.
So it has to arise. And while it appears as hardness, seeing sees. If it does not fall away, there can never be seeing. Citta can experience only just one object at a time. See how much we don't know about Dhamma, about reality, each moment.
Right. But is it also a question of what we believe deep down, if we put our mind to it? Because most of the time we're not considering the question of ultimate reality. Is the microphone real? Does it have ultimate existence or anything like that? We don't even pay any attention to it. We just use the things in the world and they are concepts only. So we don't put our mind to the question of reality or not. So does it mean that if we were asked, because some people do have the idea that in the ultimate sense things have reality, especially people, especially living beings, they think of a soul, they think of some kind of consciousness that's hidden, that oversees everything and that kind of thing. And that's clearly wrong view. But just to think in terms of conventional appearance and solidity, so forth. Would that also be an aspect of wrong
view? Yeah, what's that? What's that which you say, solidity? No doubt?
No doubt it's a table.
You solidity? Mean? Doubt?
Say again later.
Solidity.
Solidity, yes.
Doubt?
Doubt.
It's a doubt about the solidity. There is doubt about table. Can there be doubt about solidity?
Can there be doubt about solidity?
As long as Panya is not there, there must be doubt.
Yeah.
Whatever happens,
yes.
Just there.
Panya is not there, definitely.
No shape,
no
form
argument
yet.
About that. It's
but
a question of whether wrong
there.
View
what
is there.
I think the point is that when we first start talking about wrong view, it's obvious when we think that this is a person or this is a body, we know that this is wrong view when we think it an absolute reality. But what Ajahn's pointing to is how the ditti is more and more subtle, like what about the subtle ditti, even in the idle process, completely unknown. So we cannot assume that there is no ditti there when thinking about solidity or table, because it's unknown, there's no panya, and this is what was meant by deeper and deeper and more difficult, because more and more subtle kinds of ditti arising, even now while I'm speaking about dharmas, completely unknown.
I think we all agree that ditti, one of the asavas, so it is there in a subtle form all the time. But that's not the question we're discussing. What we're trying to get to, I think, is the characteristic of wrong view when it appears, because the asavas don't appear. The characteristic of the asavas doesn't appear. What I think we would like to understand more clearly, what is the characteristic of wrong view when it appears? Doubt whether that's solid or not. Are you saying that's characteristic of
is
wrong view?
Is there doubt or no doubt about that?
At the
which
present...
is solid. Because you think that you understand characteristic, but actually, what is it? See? As long as there's doubt, it means that it's not the keen or skillful understanding.
Right. Lack of understanding. We agree with lack of understanding, but lack of understanding is not the same as wrong view, is it? Because wrong view is having an understanding that we think is right, but is wrong.
And when it's not the moment of beginning to understand directly of a reality, then there must be doubt about whatever is the object to show that there is doubt, as long as even it's there. Because doubt should be known as not self. And that moment, it's doubt.
Sarah mentioned about the conventional truth. I just want to clarify if I understand correctly. Then Ajahn explained whether conventional truth only for the with the understanding, right? I mean, just what we see the table immediate after the seeing, then it the idea of the self there. So it's not conventional truth, right?
If we're talking about conventional truth, it means even before you heard anything about the Buddha's teachings, like from when you were a child, you learned that this is a table, that you are Gung, and this is your friend Roti, or, and so on. So this is conventional truth. It's what is acceptable and conventionally correct. That these are trees outside, and this is the fan. This is conventionally what is true. So when we learn about Paramatta Dharmas, it's still correct. It's still, we call this a table, we call this friend Roti, we call this a fan. But we learn that this is only conventionally true in the absolute sense. There is no kun Roti, there is no tree. There are just different dharmas.
No, conventional. No, I just try, want to understand about the moment. Like Ajahn said, after the moment of the seeing, already the table there, then the idea of the self, right? There, then if
that's
understanding
that. We're talking about, that's not conventional
okay.
truth. When there's the, so even in that idle process, if there's the idea, the wrong idea that the visible object is something, then at that moment, we're talking about the nature of wrong view. Okay. We're not talking about what is conventionally true.
Ajahn, a moment ago, Ajahn asked if when seeing, is there a self-seeing, right? And almost everybody said, yes, I am seeing. But then Ajahn asked a second question, and she said, and if I don't ask you about is there a self-seeing, then I think that if you don't ask, if we don't ask ourselves, there's only seeing happening. We don't pay attention. But it's only when you ask that we kind of question ourselves, and then we say, yeah, there's I seeing. So that means that when we don't ask, that means that there's no wrong view at those moments.
There is unknown.
Right.
Exactly. Until one is asked. Because there is seeing. No one asks about it. Everyone just talk about it is not self. It arises to see. It now sees. But is there any doubt about that which now sees? What is it? Which sees? See? It doesn't mean that we have doubt only about the conventional word, but doubt about reality as well. Until right understanding can eliminate doubt little by little because of the understanding of the characteristic directly, understanding better and better. For example, this heart before hearing the teachings, and even after hearing the teachings, one begins to think, heart is a reality. See, we follow the words, but what about the development of understanding the reality as not self?
We don't really know that there is doubt.
That's why.
We don't realize it.
Without the intellectual understanding, there is no conditions for satipatthana, or the higher level of understanding, patipatti. And no one can do anything because actually they are the sankhara khanda from moment to moment of understanding, very useful each moment without just only one. There cannot be the development of understanding more.
And for the object that we already know, it immediately happened like this. But for the object we never seen or never heard before, then
exactly
what is the process?
The same. You heard about the word parsa, you heard about sanya, but they do not appear now. Is there no doubt? And when it appears, can there be doubt?
When it appear does mean panya.
Just like hardness now appears, but pasa does not appear. Okay. But when hardness now appearing, is there any doubt of it? Yes. So as pasa appears, can there be no doubt at all about it? That's why we should respect the teachings, study carefully, respectfully. Each word is so very subtle. As he said after his enlightenment, dhammas are so very subtle.
I didn't understand what Ajahn just said about doubt.
Is there doubt now? Is there doubt now?
Doubt about?
Yes. Just, is there doubt?
Yeah. Oh, yes, there is doubt.
See,
now. Yeah.
Unknown. But when the doubt is now arises, so it appears as doubt, no understanding of even the reality of it as not self or not anything at all. Exactly like touching the table or the hardness, there's still doubt about the characteristic which appears when panya is not there enough.
Please.
Until it arises and falls away, each word of the Buddha is so true.
But what does it mean to have doubt about the touching? I don't understand.
About five khandhas. And when it's khandhas, no word. Seeing now, even we don't say that it sees or is seeing, there's doubt about it.
But doubt in which
or
sense?
Or do you have no doubt about seeing now? When seeing sees? Because seeing is there already, but panya is not there.
But why do we need panya in order to know that there is not to have doubt about that there is seeing now?
Is there seeing now?
Yes, there is.
Is there doubt now?
There's no doubt that there is seeing.
No doubt? Asking such question?
Well,
no
not
doubt.
About seeing now.
Seeing now, and is there doubt at moment of asking?
I mean, I have doubts about what Achan is talking about.
And doubt about...
But not about the seeing. I know that the seeing is happening now.
And doubt happens as well.
Right.
Otherwise,
a moment,
there's
a
no
moment
question.
After.
Yeah.
When you say you have no doubt about seeing now, do you mean seeing as the consciousness that experiences physical object? Or do you mean I can see people and things, so therefore I have no doubt about seeing? Which is your lack of doubt?
No, I mean, I'm obviously seeing people and things, but what do you mean having doubt about it? That's what the part that I don't understand. I mean,
well,
I'm seeing
John's
people and things,
about,
and I know that that's wrong. I mean,
John
that's not
asking,
real.
John is asking, I think, about the Dhamma that is seeing consciousness when she says, do you have any doubt about seeing now? Is that right?
One knows it's not me who sees, right?
Yeah, one knows. Yeah, I know intellectually.
But at
yes.
this moment of seeing, what is it? Is it still I?
Oh. Yeah, okay, yeah. Oh, I see, Ajahn.
Or like earlier when we were talking Ajahn. About pleasant feeling and how it's not the same as everyone knows there is pleasant feeling, but what about as Dhamma? For an instant that appears, is there any doubt about understanding of pleasant feeling as Dhamma different from the idea we have about what is pleasant feeling or Virya or any of the Dhammas we've talked about?
Can we say that it's more in terms of ignorance rather than doubt? For instance, the fact that close your eyes, open your eyes, you see table, you see objects, persons, in the conventional sense. It's not so much a question of doubt, it's a question of ignorance that has to be dispelled by panya. I mean, it's not, I'm not sure it's a doubt. If one has not studied the Dhamma, then it's obviously a doubt.
What about now? What kind of feeling is it? What kind of Vedana?
Feeling?
Yeah, what kind of Vedana at this moment? Doubt?
No, I don't think it's doubt.
At that moment, not wondering, not being sure. It's different
oh,
from
being,
ignorance.
And in
yes.
terms of not being sure.
Not knowing, wondering.
So
instantly.
You're calling it doubt instead of ignorance?
It's a different reality. It comes in
oh, okay.
very quickly.
Yeah,
different
it's a different reality.
Reality,
but there's still a doubt when
doubt
there's...
Doubt about what kind of feeling, a doubt about what appears now, different from just not knowing.
I'm not sure there's a doubt as much as there is not a recognition of it.
A moment of wondering.
like what is seeing at this moment? Is it I who sees that moment of just wondering, not being sure? It's doubt at that moment.
Sarah, as I study that doubt arises with Mohamulacitta, but Mohamulacitta in life, in everyday, is not apparent when it arises as the lofa of lofa or dosa citta. But when there is doubt, such as when now I doubt about the any reality here, so it seems that the doubt arises with lofa citta, because mohamulacitta
it can never be, doubt can never arise with lobha, because no pleasant feeling at that moment, or it's just that moment. Like you say, ignorance is so common, usually totally unknown, but at that moment of ignorance, just that, it can be ignorance with not knowing or ignorance with doubt, as you mentioned, just for a moment.
So there's a shade of difference about doubt, rather conventional doubt, and what is being discussed here. For example, if it's not Dhamma, then it's concept, and floating along in concept, and then understanding, oh, lost in thought, no Dhamma, just concept so much, and that's ignorance. Whereas doubt here, what you just said about not sure, it's different from not knowing.
But even if not thinking about the Dhamma, but just thinking normally in life and lost in daydreams as usual, and countless moments of ignorance and many, many moments of doubt arising too, very common. So some ignorance without doubt and some with doubt.
Yes, yes.
But usually completely unknown.
Yes, thank you.
We heard Ajahn say many times, after this, there is no more this personality. And I feel, well, even now, there is not a person. But what Ajahn said, after this, it seems more radical. And maybe it's good if we can listen again. You could elaborate more on this. After this, no more personality. Yeah.
I have one more question about doubt. It's sounding, I guess I want to see if I'm getting this correctly. It's sounding like until there is direct understanding of realities, there can be doubt. There will be doubt about them. So that level of banya is needed to, I'm not going to say eradicate at all, but level understanding at the level of satipatthana, only then could there be conditions for there to be less doubt?
When there's doubt completely eradicated, at what time? When?
Only the sotapanna has no more doubt. So satipatthana still doubt. Vipassana jnana, still conditions for doubt to arise, so only completely eradicated at the first stage of enlightenment.
I don't think I've made myself clear here. That until there is direct understanding, which can be through satipatthana, understanding at the level of satipatthana, there will be mostly doubt. Because at the level of satipatthana, there is some direct understanding of the realities. Am I missing some? I may have misunderstood something that was said earlier.
There is doubt now that can be known.
Yes.
When there is satipatthana, and
yes,
according to conditions,
yes,
it does mean that it has to be known. But it depends on conditions.
Like the questions another friend often asks, if there is more understanding, is there less akusala, or when there's more understanding, will there be less anger, or this kind of thing, or when there are more moments of satipatthana, will there be less doubt? But it depends on accumulations and conditions. Otherwise, it's just expecting and imagining what it is like at such a time.
Right. I guess I'm still not there in terms of my question. I realize that it's not necessarily less.
Now when you say it's mostly doubt now, but at that time it's not mostly doubt.
Right.
But it depends now on accumulations, whether and how much and how often doubt arises. It depends on many different conditions.
Okay.
And the same when satipatthana develops. It depends on the accumulations and conditions.
Right.
It doesn't mean that for the one who has a lot of accumulations for doubt to arise often, it doesn't mean that because there's direct understanding of realities, there won't still be a lot of doubt arising.
But it sounds like I may be correct in saying it's mostly doubt now, before that.
Do you mean it's mostly doubt?
Well, we're talking about seeing, and is there doubt about seeing? And I'm talking, yes. So I'm talking not conventionally, but at the level of pariyatti understanding. That there's still a lot of doubt. I'm not. If there's still a lot of thought, obviously, if I'm seeing, I'm hearing, I am touching the table, etc. And at those moments, there is doubt. At the moments where there's not, when there is seeing before there is a deeper understanding, at the level of direct understanding, I'm talking about before now, not after. Is it a lot of doubt unknowingly, unknown, that we cannot know?
Now it can be known.
Yes, exactly. Okay, I think if I can find a different way to word it, I may try later.
But in our daily life, we don't often think about realities. So at those moments, we are not thinking about seeing or hearing. So there's ignorance for sure, but at those moments, I don't think there's doubt, if there's no wondering about what is that.
They are gone when there is no awareness directly.
I think the point, Anne, is that we think about a story and a situation about doubt or any other dharma and how it must always be there, and it's almost like trying to find what we think must always be there, and then imagining how, when there are moments of direct understanding, then how it is less. But it's not understanding at this moment of the reality of doubt that appears right now when thinking and wondering about it, and even thinking and wondering about whether it arises in daily life, even that this moment it's doubt right now, because it's actually can only be known. And who knows the accumulations or the circumstances or when it will appear next. So we have assumptions it must always be there, or it must arise every time there's seeing or hearing, but actually there's no understanding of that reality when it appears right now. No way of knowing, it's just a story about it.
Okay, yes, it's a story right now. Thank you.
Ajahn said many times, after death there is no more this personality at all.
After what?
Death.
Not now?
After that, not now. Or also now, but see? After death, nothing is remembered anymore.
Exactly the same, because it's just like a dream, because the last moment in life, that's not experienced, this world. Yeah. And the next moment is Patisanti, instantly. Yeah. So, always now. Yes. Katnika Marana. Katnika Marana.
Right.
Not only death. Just a moment ago, who remember?
Just a moment ago, what?
Who remembers? Just a moment ago, what's there? Yeah.
We don't remember.
Because Sanya remembers the next one instantly.
Right. Yeah.
When we talk in terms of Paramattha Dhamma, absolute reality is clearer. Otherwise, the self trying to find out, thinking all the time.
Nina, I would like to know a little bit more about why you're asking the question, or what you mean by the question. After death, no more this personality. How could we expect this personality to continue beyond death, if that's what you're...
It sounded rather harsh, more than we know that each moment changes and there is no person here, in theory, really. But only in theory.
It's the same for all of us. We cling to our present personality, and the idea of it not persisting somehow is difficult to comprehend. Everyone assumes there will be some kind of other life after death, right?
And it's the accumulations. The accumulations of this life go on to the next life. So we still feel there must be some connection.
But there's no carrying on of the physical body, obviously, right? Right. So you mean that when you say personality and accumulations continue, you're referring to things like our sense of humor and our preference for this and that?
The accumulated skill.
Also. Yes, accumulated skill. Okay, like in your case, music, for example.
Yeah.
So there's the idea that in the next life, whatever form that takes, there would be the skill in music or the accumulation for an interest in music.
Yes.
To persist.
There was also a question on the list about an old couple who hoped to be reborn in the same place.
Yes.
And then the Buddha said it depends on the accumulation of kusala, but he pointed out to the citta, really.
Right. So if a couple is told that if they want to be reborn together in the next life, then the way to do it is to develop understanding exactly to the same extent each. Is that showing a way, or is that showing how it's really not possible to achieve that?
It's more like an exhortation to develop kusala and not clinging so much.
But how could two people expect to develop understanding to the same extent
level?
Is quite impossible, isn't it? So is he not pointing out the impossibility of achieving that aim by any kind of working towards it?
More than speculation about this, think of the citta, the kusala citta, and it falls away immediately too. It doesn't stay. But the Buddha would always exhort people to develop kusala, and only that.
I think your question about losing the personality at the end of life, and you said it sounds harsh, but I think it's only because there is clinging now to a personality and an idea of self now. Like if we talk about seeing, like Ajahn just said, the seeing a moment ago is completely
forgotten. The hearing now, a moment ago, what did it hear? Completely forgotten already. But when it's my seeing, my hearing, that's so important. It seems to last, and it seems like it's part of my personality that one doesn't want to lose. So actually, the understanding of dharmas now is the way to understand that even what we take for personality now is a fantasy, because there are just different dharmas arising and falling away that don't belong to anyone. And at the end of life and the beginning of next life, just the same, just different dharmas, still not my seeing or anyone's seeing, just different moments of seeing to be forgotten as soon as they've arisen, nothing, gone. So that's why it is Karnika Marana, momentary death, even at this very moment. So all is lost, even now. The personality of a moment ago is completely lost now. If there's lobha now and there was doubt a moment ago, there's no doubt at this moment, it's gone completely. So no personality from beginning to end.
Yeah, I was just wondering why Ajahn would stress very much this fact about after death, no more personality.
And now?
No more. But I say it, I say it in theory, but I am not eradicated wrong view.
But this is the truth. This is the truth.
Yeah.
Absolute truth.
I think the reason that Ajahn may stress that at the end of this life, all that we take for being personality is gone, it's just a reminder of the uselessness of clinging now. So what we find so important, the skills, like we were talking about different kind of skills yesterday, cooking skill, all these skills, the different personalities, everything we find so important, completely gone at the end of life, but in the deeper sense, actually it's gone at each moment now.
Can you meet the other's personality just a moment ago now?
But we can remember.
Yes, but not the exact one. And what about next life? The person you'd like to meet, change personality, you still like?
Can you help me? I cannot quite hear it.
We think of someone as having a particular personality, but personalities change over a lifetime anyway, right? Yes. So the personality of a person last year may not be the personality of that person this year.
Or even the second.
Or even a shorter period.
Yeah.
Yes.
That points to the conceptual nature of personality. Yeah. It's a conglomeration of different things, isn't it? You can't pinpoint one thing or another.
Yeah. Okay.
Like everyone is attached to Ajahn's kind personality. What about if she is cross with one? Does one like that personality at that moment? And at the end of lifetime, one thinks, oh, I might think I want to meet Ajahn or you or Jonathan next life, but personality completely different. So yeah. One's just clinging to a fantasy about this personality or that personality, just lobha. It's just the story of lobha, not understanding that what we take for personality is just a figment of the imagination, because just like in our case, there are moments of seeing, moments of hearing, moments of attachment, moments of doubt. It's like for everyone, even the one one's so attached to.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what Ajahn was answering you when you said next life, no personality. And Ajahn said, and now there is no personality, even now there is no personality.
So when we mentioned about personality, that it's like a whole thing, right? The, a lot of accumulation about different things, like loba, about interested about this thing and the other thing, and views about this and that, and that the whole stuff we call it personality, right? That
and it helps a lot to be reminded that in reality there are just different dharmas, no personality, because we have so many stories about this personality and that personality, and the one we like and the one we don't like, and the one who does this and the one who has, totally forgetting about different dharmas at those moments of thinking about personality. It's just thinking with wrong view at this moment, no understanding at all, no calmness. It's disturbance with agitation, lost in the dreams about different peoples and places, not understanding anything about what appears now at those moments. So it helps a lot, I think, to realize that in truth, no personalities.
And then, excuse me, please. And then there's which bhumi, which plane of existence, dog, cat, where, you know, where to meet up.
Someone asked us in Vietnam about that sutta, exactly the same question as on our discussion list and the couple, and I think it's just pointing to the benefit of developing kusala, developing understanding, which brings its own good results. No need to think anything more than that. Because in reality, no people, no couple, no beings at all. But if there's no understanding of Abhidharma, whatever one reads in the suttas will be about people and personalities. No understanding that actually there's just citta, cetasika, and rupa, nothing else at all.
You cling to what?
To self.
Actually, to nothing. What it's clung to has gone completely, never to return to be the dearest object anymore.
But people can say, is this not annihilation belief?
What do you mean?
The difference.
She's saying it sounds like Ucheda Ditti.
That like?
Ucheda Ditti.
Wrong view means there's nothing after, no conditions for anything to arise. But actually, what arises depends on conditions.
Conditions, yeah, that is the difference.
Mm-hmm. I think what Nina has in mind, though, is that it's said that accumulated tendencies are carried forward from one citta to the next. So it's true that what has fallen away has fallen away, yet we learn that the accumulated tendencies are carried forward. Is that your idea?
What about the queen was born as a worm?
Even though she had developed such high understanding and confidence, and you might say so little doubt about the teachings, but still, because not a sotapanna, so conditions for to be reborn as a worm, Queen Malika.
Achan, I don't understand when you said clinging to nothing, when you asked Nina, because we're clinging to seeing, to visible object, to
what
hearing.
What is clung to now has gone completely, never to return. So you cling to what?
But there, what is, there another what is, moment of clinging to the other object.
Each moment arises and falls away, never to return, even clinging. But there are conditions for clinging to arise again and again and again. To that which just appears and then disappears instantly, unknowingly. Is that true?
About what?
Is that true or not true?
What is the sound that you like now? What sound do you like?
Your voice.
Okay. But that sound has gone already by the time there is liking. So it's clinging actually to nothing because the sound that was heard has gone instantly. So it's clinging to that sound that's already disappeared.
But the moment of
and
clinging.
And then there's another sound and then another clinging, but it's always clinging to what has already gone.
Okay.
Like tasting when eating. You eat the chili and there's the chili taste and there's instant loba, but actually that taste that was experienced has already gone, but still clinging to that taste. So it's clinging to nothing because there's no longer tasting of that taste, just dreaming about it.
So can we say that there's a lot of clinging to different nothing?
Clinging to nothing all the time.
So it's accumulated.
Accumulated, clinging to different nothings.
But then it's craving still there, craving for nothing.
So the craving is real at that moment, but what the craving is for has gone already. So craving for the taste, but like now there may be craving for the taste of breakfast, but it's actually craving for nothing because there's no taste. And even what was tasted a moment ago has gone. Even what was seen a moment ago has gone. So that's why Jan was saying craving for nothing.
So in that sense, those are two nothings and understand nothing.
Yes, you understand anatta-ness.
It's sunyata, it means whatever arises from nothing, something, and then gone instantly.
When you refer to craving for nothing, are you talking about for more of what has passed already? We're talking about attachment to what we think of as present things is actually to things that have fallen away already. But are you referring to wanting more?
Wanting more of seeing, hearing, yeah. Tasting, touching.
And wanting of what has already gone and wanting what hasn't come and no understanding of what appears now.
That's the same reality, clinging to what has been in the past and craving for more of the same in the future. It's the same reality, but a different kind of object, different aspect.
And I have so many ideas about it, and the ideas keep coming, and in ignorance it persists. One idea, one concept, living in unreality, clinging, wanting nothing, in fact, yes.
It's good to know the truth. Better than having ignorance.